Kelsey Snell is our correspondent in the US. I've just lost your title, Kelsey. Sorry, I'll get to that in a minute. NPR, and you have a podcast, and you're a congressional reporter. I know that. Thank you very much for your time.
Of course, I'm glad to be here.
Now, plenty happening. The market's in a bit of a tiz. Sea of Red this morning, it's been reported our time. And there's some significant reasons for that, Kelsey.
Yes, much of this is related to the rapid spread of the Omicron variant of the coronavirus. There are huge concerns that this is going to have long-term ripple effects across the economy. We're seeing, you know, states bring back restrictions. Here in Washington, D.C., where I live, they've returned to an indoor mask mandate requiring that anybody indoors be wearing a mask. And it is just really catching people off guard, as they thought that the Delta variant would be the dominant strain, and there were expectations that perhaps the cases were trending down. That seems to have been completely reversed, and we're seeing record cases across the country, and that is certainly having a major impact on markets and people's general feelings about the economy.
Well, of course, as you said, people were feeling like there was this sort of transition coming perhaps to living with this darn virus, and now the speed at which this new one is spreading is just throwing those plans, what we think are plans, up in the air. Of course, investors never like uncertainty, do they? But there's another
Absolutely.
Big factor to what we're reading happening on Wall Street, this endless kind of drama surrounding a very big package and a very important package for the President Joe Biden. This is the infrastructure part. This was the part that had been got through. What's happened since?
Well, it seems like most of the concerns that we're seeing are actually related to the Build Back Better plan, which is the social safety net and climate spending package that did not make it through, that has been stalled for many months. Just yesterday, West Virginia Senator Joe Manchin, a Democrat, said he would not be able to vote for this bill. His support for the legislation was critical. Democrats are unable to pass it through the Senate without his support, and he said he just simply could not get there to support the bill. This included a lot of social spending, a lot of safety net spending that was supposed to, Democrats said it was supposed to help shore up people's ability to spend and participate in the economy. There are real concerns that that would slow down. When it comes down to the infrastructure spending, the $1 trillion bill that already passed, things are slowly rolling out, but that, you know, this is a jobs package, and if the coronavirus disrupts people's abilities to work and for the economy to function, that legislation cannot do its intended job, which is getting people working and getting people, producing new projects across the country on roads and bridges, on internet access, major investments that were supposed to start happening at the early next year.
But just to be clear, the infrastructure legislation is passed.
It is.
But it's the second part that now looks seriously in trouble, which is the social spending part, the more social oriented part.
That's right. And it's not just socially oriented things. It involves a huge investment in climate change, $500 billion in climate change programs were included. And that is primarily incentives to get companies and individuals to comply with new rules and regulations that are intended to help mitigate climate change. And Joe Manchin himself was in opposition to some of those proposals. He comes from a coal-dependent state, West Virginia, and his family has investments in the coal industry, and he has expressed extreme skepticism about some of the efforts to combat climate change, though I should say that those are not his only concerns with the bill.
That climate change part of the program, has that got a technology transition or another kind of infrastructure link in a way? Because that, again, would be something that would catch the attention of the markets if they see some kind of stimulus that they were anticipating not going to happen.
I think a lot of the stimulus that they were anticipating from that bill was just around the individual personal finances of people who would be impacted by the legislation. Primarily, it's the monthly child tax credit payments have been a big part of bolstering people's, basic bottom line. That's as much as $300 per month per child for families, for most families in the U.S., and that has expired. It will, people have already received their last payments and will not be receiving payments in January as would have gone forward with the Build Back Better plan that is now stalled. So, you know, Democrats are scrambling right now to both revive their agenda and to keep the markets feeling feeling upbeat, even in this moment where this virus is spreading so rapidly across the country.
Just reading that initially, crude oil prices went down by as much as 4% this morning our time, now down 2%. So it is clearly rattling the mood. And, of course, it is the holiday, getting into the holidays, or certainly the Christmas travel season. Are we seeing that much impacted by the arrival of Omicron? Are people cancelling plans, or are they just going ahead?
It's a little bit of a mix. We're getting a lot of advice from public health experts who are saying that it is important for families to be able to be together, but that it's important to take, to take as many precautions as possible. They say the number one precaution, the most important precaution, is for people to be vaccinated. Anybody who is eligible, they're recommending, should have at least two doses. With adults who are eligible, should be getting three doses of the vaccine to ensure that they're most able to, stop the spread of this virus. There are also requests that people begin testing using rapid testing, which are the at-home tests, before they go into gatherings with other adults, even vaccinated adults, to ensure that they are not carrying some undetected or asymptomatic case of the virus. And the public health officials say that those approaches, plus wearing masks indoors for large events, could help slow the spread of a virus that is truly, truly taking this country just by absolute surprise. Omicron has completely changed the calculus here.
What are the projections for the number of cases you may have daily, and therefore ultimately what that impact is going to be on hospital pressures?
Well, there are some pessimistic projections that the U.S. may reach over 500,000 daily average infections by the end of January, which is, more than double the peak from last winter before vaccines were widespread. But there are some warnings that it could be more than that. It could be as much as 1 million cases per day if there are no continued mitigation efforts, if the vaccine rollout continues to stumble. I will say that there has been a sharp uptick in doses of vaccine administered. The Biden administration is saying 1.14 million doses were reported over yesterday's total, and that includes 311,000 newly vaccinated people. So it seems that the fears about Omicron are driving more people to go seek out the vaccine.
The boosters, of course, a critical part, it appears now, in dealing with this particular variant as well. Let's look at some other news happening, Kelsey. Unfortunately, it's not good news. What's happened since this devastating tornado that we saw? Just unbelievable scenes across Illinois, Tennessee and Kentucky. The death toll, I think, is now at 92, I understand. And what about just people trying to literally pick up the pieces of their lives?
This has been just a true shock. These storms were a burst of tornadoes, not just one that rolled through these areas. President Biden visited some of the hardest hit parts of the states, and particularly in western Kentucky this past week, and pledged extensive federal support to help recover. Now, yes, as you said, at least 92 people have died, though the governor of Kentucky is saying that all of the unaccounted for people have been accounted for now, so there are no additional missing people in that state. But some areas remain without power or without drinkable water because municipal water systems were contaminated or damaged in the storm. And nearly 1,000 people in Kentucky alone are in temporary shelters or in hotels and state parks. But the goal is for federal assistance to start speeding to their area, though I guess I should say some assistance is already active. But the goal is to try to get those people into housing as quickly as possible so that recovery can begin.
Now, coming close to the anniversary of that insurrection on the at the US Capitol, and this inquiry is still going, as it had some interesting evidence before it of late.
Yeah, I should say that this investigation is just now starting to really pick up. It took time for a congressional committee investigating the insurrection to really form and for people to get underway. And the committee has now begun issuing subpoenas and holding people in contempt when they do not appear. And the House voted this week to hold Mark Meadows, the former chief of staff to former President Trump, in contempt of Congress for not participating in the investigation. He did participate briefly. He delivered some documents and was preparing for a deposition, but he pulled out of that process early. And he basically said that he did not feel that the committee was willing to protect his right to not reveal some protected information about the administration. And As a reaction, the committee read excerpts of the text that Meadows sent in his document production, where he was receiving messages from members of Congress, from members of former President Trump's family, hosts at the conservative network Fox News, and reporters who were in the building begging Meadows to intervene to get President Trump to stop the attack on the Capitol or to denounce it, to do something to prevent it while it was happening. As we know, that did not happen in that way. And the committee says they need to know more from Meadows about those conversations and about those text messages.
What are the chances of that?
Well, it is a high legal bar for the Justice Department to enforce the contempt of Congress in any criminal proceedings. Meadows does have some executive privilege that he can exert because he was an actively serving member of the administration. Now, the Justice Department is pursuing criminal contempt charges against Steve Bannon, who was another part of, you know, Trump's general advisory group, but he was not an active member of the administration. He was not on the U.S. payroll at the time, so it was easier for the department to pursue that case without, you know, the ability of Bannon having the ability to go back and claim executive privilege, which is a legal protection here in the United States.
Kelsey, thank you very much, and season's greetings to you, and thank you for the time you give to us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Kelsey Snell, U.S. Congressional, NPR Congressional Reporter and our U.S. Correspondent.